Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. Ernest, what's up? Y'all know I'm big on doing your research, sharing your research, and giving credit to where you found the research. But I always get asked the same question. Where do I start with the research? And the answer is easy. It's our sponsor, Yahoo Finance. Whether I'm tracking the daily movement of my favorite companies, doing technical analysis with their easy-to-use charting platform, or checking balance sheets, Yahoo Finance makes something very complex simplified. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or you're looking for extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. You could actually securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors. And it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. With a community of over 90 million users each month, the real strength is helping you on your way to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination. That's yahoofinance.com. You heard me, yahoofinance.com. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. I use it. You should go over there and start using it now.
All right, guys. Welcome back. Another episode, EYL.
Yeah, virtually.
Virtual edition. So today's a special episode because, you know, the good thing with having a business podcast, it allows you to cover almost everything.
Yeah.
Everything is a business on a certain level.
Yeah, revolves around money.
It comes down to money and finances. Like Wu-Tang said, cash rules
everything.
That's a fact. So, you know, we wanted to do this episode for a while as far as cover the prison system and cover the state of, you know, criminal justice reform and mass incarceration from a financial standpoint.
Because it's a business.
A lot of people don't realize that. It's a billion-dollar business.
Billion dollars.
And, you know, we wanted to just make sure that, you know, we, A, had enough information, and then we wanted to bring somebody on with a real-life experience.
Authentic experience.
So it was, like, just perfect because not only does our guest have a real-life experience, but he's on the front lines as far as being a social activist for years. And not only that, one of the best MCs ever, bar for bar.
I mean, I remember from the Violator days, man.
Yeah.
I remember I had the poster on my wall, man, that Violator album.
So if you're not familiar, Maison. Maison is our guest today. And yeah, Maison is dope from a musical standpoint. Huge following on social media, been on Flex, arguably one of the best Flex freestyles ever.
I think you got like 5 of the top 10 joints.
That's a fact. So it's crazy. Wallo just posted it yesterday. Shout out to Wallo, our brother. So yeah, one of the best funk flex freestyles ever. But bigger than that, just like I said, a social activist, been on the front lines, really doing his thing and making a difference in the community. So first and foremost, before we get started, thank you. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, brothers. Thank you.
Yeah, I still remember the first line. The first time I ever heard you. Lefty, my song.
Lefty.
That's still one of the hardest intros to a rap song I've ever heard.
Lefty, gun up in the rifle. That was different. So, yeah, so, Mice, I want to tell the people the backstory. They might not know. They might have just seen your freestyles, or they might have seen you, you know, doing a social activist thing, but they might not have known your story of, you know, where you got to this point. And for us, we grew up in the 90s, grew up in the early 2000s, and we huge fans of music. So when me and Troy, like when we first started hearing about your name, it was on the underground circuit. And then that Rough Riders. Rough Riders was so hot, it's kind of hard for me to explain to people that's younger, like, Rough Riders was it. They had the, it was bigger than music though, because they had the whole motorcycle movement.
Motorcycle thing was crazy.
And they had the merch, they had the t-shirts, and it was like, they was huge. Like, it's kind of hard for me to make a comparison to any other kid.
There's not one right now.
Nah, they was like 300, 500 deep with motorcycles, like all over the country.
Shut down the Major Deegan for real.
So when they put out their compilation, you had that legendary verse, and then your name was just buzzing all over. And believe you signed with Violator, but then, you know, you was incarcerated for 7 years, came out. So can you talk about that as far as your journey from being a musician to being incarcerated and then coming home? And I'm not sure if you first started your activism when you first came home, or if it took a while for that, or like, was that actually started while you were incarcerated? And you know what's crazy? Funny story, because I got like a photographic memory. I memorized everything. I don't even know if you remember this.
Let me see.
I think like the first week you was home, because it was like a big thing when you came home too. And the first week you was came home, we saw at Two Fish, One Fish.
We was out. 98th and Amsterdam.
Yeah, we was out with some of our friends, and he was like, "Yo, that's my song right there. He just came home." Like, he literally just came home. That's crazy. I just remembered that.
Good
randomly.
Place to go to.
Yeah. So yeah, can you talk about that as far as your journey from music to being incarcerated and then, you know, doing what you're doing now?
Yeah, so it's going to be a long story, so just sit back for it.
we ready.
Ready.
But I got signed. I mean, I started in the industry in about 98. My then manager Tone was had managed Mace, and I had a group back in the days. We called ourselves the Cartel, and it was three of us. It was me, my friend Steve, and my friend Cam, and we kind of sound like the Lox, though. You know, we had that whole Lox feel, because that was the thing at that time.
Not a bad thing to be.
Between the Bronx, so we had that feel, and we sounded different, but it was similar, because it was street, and it was three of us. So, we was trying to get a deal, and a lot of people was like, that we was dope. We actually did. We had an interview. That's when Super Mario was with Bad Boy. He brought us to his office, and he was like, "Y'all sound a lot like the Lox. Y'all need to try to look more like De La Soul or something." Yeah, like five heads.
That's two different ends of the spectrum.
Looking for more, you know. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Anyway, so then we met up with my manager. He had met them first in a barbershop in the Bronx. And he was from Queens, and he happened to be there with one of his friends that owned the barbershop, and I heard my boys rhyming. And then he was interested in them, because he had just finished managing Mace. He was still doing some things in and out of the industry, but he was managing Mace for a little while, and was still looking, you know, to move around the industry. He had a lot of connections. So he wanted to meet with them. He's like, yo, if you think we dope, you got to hear our other part. And by that time, I had kind of got a little jaded with the industry. We had like 3 different meetings, and, you know, Super Mario had told us to sound like De La Soul, and it was just bullshit. I'm like, man, I'm in the street. I ain't even worried about that. So they like, yo, I wasn't going to meet with this dude. I'm not doing that. You know what I'm saying? For what? I'm tired to keep hearing the same old shit. So I let him talk me into it. Dude pulls up. That's in 98. He pulls up in front of my building with a Navigator, black, brand new Navigator. So nobody ain't have no Navigator in 98. So nah. He got to be somebody. He know he doing something. So he pulls up in front of my building, get in the car. He like, I'm just quiet because I'm always the one that never pays, you know, never believes nothing. I'm always skeptical of everybody. So I'm sitting in the back. They talking to him. He quiet. He looking at me like, what's your name? I'm like, my name is Myself. And then he's like, you all right? I'm like, I'm good. I'm just, I don't know you. Like, you know, I'm just paid. I'm 18 years old.
New York state of mind.
Yeah, you know, I'm focused. Me and my man is here. I feel all right, but I still just don't know you. I don't know if this is some game, you wasting our time, whatever. So he throws on beats and they spit. So then he like, so do you rhyme? I'm like, yeah, I rhyme. He's like, so why? I'm like, because, you know, I'm not in the mood right now. So he laughs. He's laughing like, all right, I get it. So then he happens to play a beat that I fuck with. So I spit. So he just looked at me. I was like, all right. And we drove straight to, first part, we drove to, I think we drove, that's when Free, if you're back in the industry, that's when Free, light skinned brother, he had Afro with light eyes. He used to run Jermaine Dupri's organization. So he took me to Free's office in the city. We went straight in the building, boom, upstairs, we sitting in there. So he like, yo, Ron. So we spitting, nigga like, yo, he dope. He takes me to, that's when Uptown Baby came out, and Tracy Waples was the man, they was managing Lord Tariq and Peter Guns.
So yeah, BX. He took me to
the Waples office. So I'm in there, bit, they like, oh, this nigga fire. So by the end of the day, we had went to 4 different record labels. He just got us inside, like, and they was all like, nah, these dudes is dope, but we like him more. You know what I'm saying? So he's like, yo, everybody listen, but most of the people like you. So, you know, that's when I started believing him. I'm like, he ain't really just no dude that's bullshitting, that's coming, you know, trying to play no games. Then from there, I had a big battle with Sean.
In front of Justin's, right?
Justin's.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Sean Paul.
That was like, but prior to that, I had went to Un's office, that's when Entertainment, you know.
They had Cam.
They had Charlie Baltimore, and I think it was just Cam and Charlie.
Yeah.
So I walk in the Un office and just start rhyming. Almost, all right, we signing them. Don't let nobody else hear him. I did a song that day in the studio. Digga, who was producing most of Cam tracks, was in the studio when we did a song that was so fire that it was probably like, it's still like one of my favorite songs. It never came out, nothing. Mm. But we played this song, she was fire. So I was supposed to get signed to them. So he like, yo, don't let nobody else hear him. I was like, yo, don't let nobody else hear him. We gonna sign him. Now that's what Sean had just got signed to Bad Boy. But nobody knew that I had this case, I had a case from 97. So I'm still fighting this case. So we supposed to do the deal for a couple of weeks. Un finds out I had the case. I told like, yo, I got this case. So now he backs out the deal like, oh, he got a case. I don't really want to do it. I don't know. So now we back on the shipping block. Nobody else knows about the case but us, whatever. So we go to Justin's. Now we fast forward to Justin's. And Nori and Sean is outside just rhyming.
Boom. Randomly.
Randomly. They just in front of Justin. That's what could be on Tuesday nights with industry nights. So randomly you'll pull up to Justin's and niggas just outside rhyming.
Yeah. 98, that was the time. That was the NORE album.
No, that's what and I remember when he first played
Super Thug? Super Thug?
No, not Super Thug. The shit we had Pun, Cam.
Oh, Band from TV.
Band from TV.
Band from TV. Pulled up there. and played that song. And I was like, yo, let me just get on this.
Please.
He just laughed. He's like, nah, this
oh my gosh.
So listen to this track, like, yo, how did this happen? You know what I'm saying? Anyway, so we outside there, they freestyling. My lawyer at the time, Matt Middleton, was listening to the, he listening to the rhyme. He's like, yo, he comes inside, we inside Justin's eating. He come like, yo, the outside rhyming, Sean and them is out there. Now, I know Sean is the dude that just got the $1 million deal. You know, I got 100 rhymes in the clip. I'm already mad. You know what I'm saying? I got a chip on my shoulder. I'm like, I'm better than this nigga. He's fake Biggie. You know all this stuff.
That was the thing. That was the thing at that time. I was like, how y'all gonna sign a dude to sound like Big?
I just see that sign a nigga, whatever. So I'm like, all right, I go outside. So my man's like, go ahead. And then Nori was like, yo, you want to spit? Because Nori had never heard me rhyme to this time. Like, he ain't never heard me. So I'm like, all right, I'll throw something in there. I rhyme. Nori looks at me like, oh, this is fire. This shine rhyme. He's like, oh, okay. He's like, let me get out of this. He backs up. I go again. Now that the crowd is, Clue is there. It's, everybody's coming. It's, we got one of the biggest circles in the parking lot of Justin's that probably ever happened. So we going. It was to the point where I know he was like, enough, man. You got to slow down, killer. You trying to kill this man. So it went back. It got back to Puff that, yo, he ate your artist. Yo, he killed Sean in front of the thing. So I had this big bidding war. You know what I'm saying? We had a bidding war. Jermaine Dupri flew me out to his house. I sat down with pretty much every label from there. Chris Lighty was like, yo, what are we going to do? But Chris is from the Bronx.
Rest in peace.
And I had this big bidding war and ended up going with Chris Lighty, man. And me and Sean became best friends after that, like, because people was trying to peg us against each other. You know, and she's like, oh, he killed you. Puff was mad. Like, yo, I don't want you rhyming outside no more. You're messing up my money. You know what I'm saying? So it was an issue for a minute. Me and him almost got into a fight over it. We was in the Hamptons. His mans was mad. It really was one of his mans. It wasn't him. His mans like, fuck that nigga. He showing you fake love. Nah. So we almost got into a big beef. Whole teams. We all 20
oh,
deep.
Oh, man. Bronx versus Brooklyn.
You know what I'm saying? We just happened to have somebody in the middle. I think it was Wolf. Wolf pretty much squashed that. God bless the dead man.
Rest in peace, yeah.
He got in the middle, had us do a sit down, and we became best friends after that. So I got signed. I signed with Chris Lighty. I was originally going to sign the Rough Riders, but I had an ego. You know what I'm saying? I was like, yo, that's DMX label. Like, I don't want to do that over here. I want my own. Like, I don't want to be under DMX. I love X, but I want to be my own. You know what I'm saying? He got the Rough Riders. I want to have the Problem Children because that was my organization. And I was the Problem Child. And I had like five of my dudes. I called them the Problem Children. So I'm like, we can have our own stuff. I don't want to sign underneath. And they was like, nah, you can do this. But I'm like, nah, everybody already know that the Rough Riders is symbolic with DMX and the Locks. Like,
yeah.
I don't care what you say. DMX had already sold 5 million records. Like, there's no way that you come in there and you're going to be the main priority of X.
Yeah.
So, you know, Chris was like, you're going to be the priority over here. I'm telling you, we're going to do this. You know, we got Foxy, but you're the only guy over here. So it's not no competition. It was Cormega, man. It was Foxy and Cormega. He's like, yeah, everybody, like, they got their own lane. You're going to do your own thing. We're going to push it. We're going to do this. So he sold me and was scheduled to drop the album in the same case I had. I'm going back and forth with it. You know, we went to trial and ended up blowing trial. You know, it was my first felony or whatever, but I ended up getting sentenced to 7 to 14 years. Mm. So, you know, now that was crazy.
How old were you?
I was 20 years old.
20, wow.
So I was 20 years old, just got this record deal, just about to do all of this stuff. And I ended up blowing trial for 7 to 14 years. So I'm sitting there like, this can't be true. I was just at the Super Bowl. I was just in the Bahamas recording my album with Havoc and Prodigy. And, you know, we in the studio. I was supposed to be doing the Vibrant Thing remix the day after I got locked up. Like, it was just the weirdest turn of events that I've probably ever seen in my life. So, you know, just doing my bid, I just had to find some level of solace. And and understanding, like, you know, I got to find a purpose in this. Like, I can't sit here and let this destroy me. I can't, you know, I got to find focus. And I came up with this idea in my mind, and I was innocent of the crime that I blew trial for. Let me state that. I was convicted of armed robbery of cab drivers that I never robbed in my life. And I got picked out of a lineup. One guy picked me off a street saying I look like somebody. And so that in itself was even worse. If it was something that you did, and
yeah.
You, the other son you did, you're like, all right, this is what it comes with. But when you sitting in jail, losing a $1 million record deal, and you sitting in prison for some shit you didn't do, you know, it's a lot. But, you know, I just told myself every day that I don't learn something, I don't grow as a man, the system wins. You know what I'm saying? I can't sit here and be down. I can't, like, I'm going home eventually. I got at least 7 years to do here, so I got to figure out what I'm going to do. So I worked out. I read. I exercised. I wrote rhymes. I had books of rhymes. You know, I studied. You know, and I started realizing that the prison was a business. Like you said, it was an industrial system where we were the product. You know, mm-hmm. Black minorities go in and out of prison, and they just keep bringing the same ones in here, and they selling us the same fairy tales. You know, they making you believe that it's some type of badge of honor to go to prison from our communities, and we going in and out, and the dudes is coming home telling us how cool it is and how gangster they is, because they was locked up and they was in the yard, and Shorty was coming to visit me, and all of this bullshit that you find out when you in there, it's a bunch of dudes that just dying to get home. Some dudes you probably would never even talk to in the street, now you surrounded by these dudes. Mm. So I realized that, and I'm like, yeah, we've been lied to for years, you know what I'm saying, especially in our communities. So when I came home, my mind frame was different. I didn't immediately get into activism, but I was definitely way more conscious. You know what I'm saying? So my focus was different. My whole path was different. So when I did, 7 years later, when I did make my parole board and got out, you know, I still pursued my music, but, you know, it took time because you, after 7 years, you out of touch. You don't know what's going on. You know, people, you don't got, you know, I'm trying to
figure
it out.
Can you talk about that? Like, how did, 'cause I don't think people, the vast majority of the population has never been to jail, right? So it's kind of hard for people to understand with somebody that, especially for a long periods of time, like 7 years. I remember, I think it was Mano, and he was saying when he first came out of jail, he forgot how to cross the street. Like, like you become institutionalized, and it's exactly. How hard is it to adapt back into society when you've been away for 7 years?
It is very hard because it's different. So many different transitions that you have to go through. You have to go through your own. You have to adapt back into society. You have to get out of the society that you was in. You have to evolve your thinking because you used to things being one way. You know what I'm saying? You used to do things being a way that they were in the street before you got back. Then you're used to the surroundings that you just left. So there's so many different elements that you have to unpack and unroll from. So first you're quiet because when you're in prison, you can't, you're not allowed, you're not very energetic because that makes you a target. So the loudest person in the yard is the target and usually the weakest person. So that's how they judge you. So you have to be very militant. You got to be very focused. You got to not say much. You listen more than you talk. You know, in society, you have to network. So the more quiet you are, that the less productive you are. So I'm moving around people, and I'm coming around, and people, oh, I heard you, yeah, boom, boom, and I'm just quiet. People are like, yo, what's up with you, man? He all right? Like, everything good with him? I'm like, nah, I'm good. He good. And they're like, yo, you all right? I'm like, yeah, I'm good. What do you mean? I'm saying, like, you look like people are scared to talk to you. I'm like, nah, what, like, and I didn't understand what they were talking about, but I didn't make myself approachable because I was a lot more serious. And then, especially dealing in this industry, you know how fake this shit is. Mm-hmm. How everybody will shake your hand and tell you they love you and they're going to call you tomorrow and that's not going to happen. They're going to do this with you and it's not going to happen. So that don't happen in prison.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That don't really happen in the streets, just regular being in the streets when you deal with men. It don't really go like that. So when you start having those conversations and you seeing these industry dudes and they tell you how much they love you, yo, we're going to do this, and then they don't. When you come from prison, it's like, yo, why you ain't do that? Everybody is used to that outside. So when you approaching the dude after he said he's going to do something, he don't. He's nervous now. Now they like, yo, we don't want to be around this dude. He bugged out. You know what I'm saying? That's why when you look, when Maine came home, he was doing a lot of stuff. He was, it was a lot about because he wasn't used to being on that time where you play with me. You understand what I'm saying? Like, you're going to do something to me. You can't say you're going to do something for me and don't do it. You can't give me a hug, look me in my eye and say, I got you. And then I call you, you don't answer your phone. Or you see me and we have the same conversation three times and nothing happens. So that's a process. So I was getting enemies from not playing because I'm taking you literally. Like DJ, like, yo, I love you. I'm going to do this. I'm going to play your record. I'm like, I'm coming to the DJ. You giving them record. They playing it for 2 seconds, turning it off. Like, and you like, what are you doing? Like, why you didn't play the song? Like, what are you talking about? You like, nah, you got to do it now, nah, but you playing some song for some nigga that live down south that you never seen before in a New York club, and you breaking the song, you playing it 4 and 5 times, but you playing my record for 3 seconds. So I was having, this is the issues. I'm turning off niggas' microphones. I'm unplugging. Like, you know what I'm saying? So this was a process for me. The acclimation, just realizing that you got to be calm, like you got to do things different the way, and you got to be a lot more diplomatic. That was a process for me. You know what I'm saying? And coming from prison, because all you have in prison is your word. The way that you carry yourself like a man, your word is everything.
Yeah.
So that's how I came home. And that's not how it is here. You know what I'm saying? People will tell you anything. And if you do not adapt to that reality, then you will find yourself outside of the bubble. So what you got to do is learn how to play the game. You don't expect anything from it. You realize you doing what you got to do. Whatever they do is a plus. You don't expect anything from it. So that was a real process of adjustment for me.
Let's talk about mass incarceration. So for people that are not familiar with some of the numbers we looked at, so there's private prisons. America, I think, is the only country that has private prisons.
Yeah.
1 out of 5 prisoners in America are in private prisons. It's a $2 billion industry, private
big
prisons.
Time. Yeah.
And the whole thing is really crazy because it's like a bunch of Fortune 500 companies have workers that are incarcerated from Victoria's Secrets, Whole Foods, Walmart. Whole Foods is actually owned by Amazon, so that's really Amazon. Walmart, Microsoft, Starbucks, BP, Nintendo, AT&T, Target, to name a few.
Just a few.
And there's a whole economic system that's based around jail, from the cost of phone calls, extremely high.
Yep.
Commissary is like way overpriced for food items. Even transportation.
To get there, yeah.
Like these prisons are in the middle of nowhere in most states. So it's like 5-hour bus trips. And then they have transportation companies that provide bus trips to people's families to come. So it's a whole system.
And they provide free labor, too.
I'm just really quick. The free labor thing was crazy, especially, and we'll get into the pandemic. But I work in a school, and I never forget when it just started, maybe like early March, they brought the hand sanitizers into our school. And at the same time they brought it in, I remember sending Shaggy the article like, yo, they got the prisoners making the hand sanitizer. I'm like, nah, I can't use that. This goes against everything I stand for. Like, you could have actually employed people to make these things and gave them a job, but you're going to let prisoners 8 cents an hour?
And the thing about it is those same prisoners that make that inside the prison can't go home and work in a factory where they do that. They won't even hire them.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? So it's like it's prisoners in there working for the phone or AT&T. They're answering AT&T calls, but can't come home and work at AT&T. They're doing construction and building. They on Corecraft is the biggest thing inside of prison. They make all the clothing, all of the soap, all everything. But you can't come home and work for Corecraft if you got a felony. So it doesn't like it's really slavery.
And so from being inside, from like firsthand experience, because I think they said the average prisoner across America gets paid like 68 cents an hour or something like that, or 86 cents an hour. You don't have an option, because I want to explain this for people, because like I said, the vast majority of people, they've never been incarcerated. So I think it's because a lot of times people don't have compassion. It's very common, especially in our community, for some reason. We're very compassionate people, but we're very uncompassionate amongst ourselves.
Exactly.
And a lot of times it's like, well, don't do the crime. Don't do, obviously, you shouldn't commit crime. That's obvious, right? Yeah. But that doesn't mean.
He's supposed to be there.
That doesn't like, mean that it's like America has 5% of the world's population and 25% of the prison population. We have more prisoners than India and China. They both have 1 billion people. We have 300 million people. So there's obviously a financial system in play here, right?
Right.
So being on the inside, how was it? Because you don't have an option to work. You have to work, right?
Right. You have programming. So with your program comes, you have to choose vocationals, which you have to like take some type of skill. Then they probably have programs that's mandatory programs based on your crime. They have drug programs you have to go to, or violence programs, alternative to violence programs you have to go to. And then you have a regular job that you have to do. And like he said, the average prisoner doesn't, I don't know, but maybe it went up to 68 cents an hour. Cause when I was there, the job was like 7 or 8 cents an hour. Mm. At the end of the week, we would make about 50 cents, probably $1 or $2. At the end of the week, we would probably have about $2, $3 if you worked the whole week, you know what I'm saying? So, and that was working the regular 7 hours, 7-8 hours a day shift, and you would get about no more than $3 to $4 a week. That was the commissary sheet. So, you know, when you in there, you don't have a choice whether to work, and you can't even survive. That amount of money is not even enough to buy toiletries. You know, they don't supply you. They supply you with soap, but they don't supply you with deodorant. You know, they don't supply you with baby oil and things of that nature, lotion yourself. So that's not even enough to buy toiletries. So most you buy with that, they give you these little $10, you know, the little $10 Roman new, 10 cent Roman soups that you can buy. An average person who has no outside friends and family to bring them anything is probably buying about 20 of those soups, and they living off that because the food that they feed you can't really fill you up. And most of it ain't even good, so it's definitely slave industry inside of prison.
Yeah, and it's a big business. I think the first time it probably was on Kanye's album, and maybe I was ignorant to it, but when he said the line the CCA teamed up with the DEA, I had to stop. I'm like, yo, the CCA, and then actually doing some research, the Correction Corporation of America, they're building these private prisons, and when you build a prison, you have to have prisoners, obviously. So they're making millions of dollars building these prisons and then finding inmates. But what they're doing in the same time is they have to incriminate people, right? So it's like, yo, the thing that used to not be illegal, now it is. And that's happened over time. We've seen that happen with Mexicans in the 1800s and the Chinese during the gold rush. Like, we're going to criminalize what they do. And people are not aware of it, right? So when you're talking about this generation, I'm just like, yeah, they don't get it because they can't see the big picture.
I didn't mean to cut you
off. No, go ahead.
America's built on capitalism. And capitalism only can survive if there's a lower class. There has to be a bottom. It don't really have to be a middle class, but the bottom has to be someone. So this is why, that's why white supremacy is such a big thing. We talk about it for black people, and people don't understand it. Oh, you could do anything. No, it's not meant for you to do everything. The reason why we in marginalized communities, why you have projects, the reason why they don't fix it up, because we need crime to happen in these communities. Mm-hmm. They need crime. Like, so when after this pandemic, there's going to be a flush in crime, because you know why? Because people are dealing with trauma, they're dealing with fear, people are going to be dealing with financial issues. They cut all of the summer programs. The kids are not getting no summer youth. It's no basketball. Mm-mm. There's no sports. They close the park. So what else are you going to do if you're living in a project? You know, you're sitting around, you're hot, you're outside, you're not staying in the house. It's nothing but crime. You're probably going to rob somebody because now you can't even enjoy the sports. The kids don't even get to go enjoy the sports. You're frustrated. You didn't graduate. You missed your graduation.
Yep.
You was probably going to, you one of the top basketball players. You're supposed to go to D1 school. You didn't even get to play your last year. You don't even know if you're going back to a school. Like, there's so much things that's going to breed crime in our communities right now.
Yeah.
You know? So this right here is a time, like, when you if you start studying stocks, the prison industry is what they invested in right now. Prison, pharmaceuticals, because they're trying to force us into back. Like, all of these things are things that's going to happen. You know, the stimulus pack was to keep people silent, because when the stimulus is over and then you go back, they said we got the highest, this is the highest unemployment ever. They got over 40 million people who've applied for unemployment who lost their jobs. So that's going to, what that's going to look like in the next couple of months when they start to reopen society and people are moving, it's going to breed crime. Yeah. It's going to be some people that have nothing.
Right. Some of them, some of those jobs that they used to have won't be there. Right. And a lot of people get confused. It's like, oh, that can't happen here. But I'm like, yo, if somebody can't eat where they live, they come into your neighborhood.
That's a fact.
You know what I'm saying?
Poverty is crime. That's the bottom line. Anywhere that you look where people live in poverty, there's crime. You know, it's not black people, it's not Hispanic people, it's the conditions that people, if you cannot change the conditions, you can't change the crime. So when people say, yo, they shouldn't have committed the crimes, well, the conditions were set there for them to commit the crime. If you, you know, some people have the ability to live with meager, to live with nothing. Some people are okay with that. But when you look outside and you see other people having things as a young boy and you're being teased for not having things and you try to figure out how to get it, and the only vision of success you ever seen was a drug dealer. The only people you ever seen have money was a drug dealer and a stick-up kid that pulled up. They had the girl you want, they had the car you want, they had the respect you want. It's not as easy as you just don't commit the crime and you just keep going to school with barely enough lunch money and holes in your jeans, and you keep telling me, no, you can't buy the new video game I want. You can't, no, we can't get these new shoes, and the cable keep getting cut off. And some days we come in, there's nothing in the refrigerator. It's easy to say they shouldn't commit the crime when you don't understand those realities. Nope. You know what I'm saying? So you have to change those realities, yeah, for you to change the mind state of the individual. Nobody wants to commit crime. I did everything possible not to commit a crime. But it was a time where I felt like I was a man, and I was around people and I didn't even feel comfortable because I didn't have a dollar or $2 in my pocket. So that starts to play on the psyche. It's a reality that we live with in marginalized communities. And, you know, and I think people who don't identify with that, and there are some people who are able to move through that without committing crime, because it's just certain people that are able to, you know, overcome that. Some people come from strong families to where even though they don't have nothing, they have a strong unit. But you can't say that to a person who father OD'd when he's 11 years old, and mother's on crack in the streets, and you don't have the food stamps, she done sold the food stamps, and you coming home and it's just you and your little sister in the house and you got to figure out how to eat. That's a different conversation. So when people say you just don't commit the crime and don't understand the realities that come with that, it's an insult. You know, it's insult to somebody who has a good heart, who considers himself a good person. If you look at most of our people who look at Jay-Z, you look at 50, when they got the opportunities, they didn't have to commit crimes. You know, but they got where they got because if it wasn't for those crimes they committed, you wouldn't even know them. They probably would have been in the streets somewhere. You understand what I'm saying? So it's a double-edged sword, and we want to do better. We got to understand the circumstances in our community.
Let me ask you this, because I'm interested to know this. You had mentioned the call centers, like AT&T or one of those companies. How does that work? Somebody's locked up. Like, they're literally answering. They're like customer service?
Yeah, customer service. That's what job. It's a job in prison. One of my friends, he came home 2 days ago, and he told me he was working for I think it was AT&T or Verizon, one of them. And he was picking up the call and said, hello, how are you? Who would you like to speak to? And he would direct the call. He had certain lines that he pressed, and he would forward them to, you know, that could give them certain help. But he was the first line of calls that they called.
That's interesting, because it's like, yeah, it's really, you know, it's like you don't have a choice to do it, because if you don't do it, what happens? You get punished, right?
Right. It's an infraction, right?
It's an infraction. You could lose your time.
Yeah.
They can if you have parole or whatever, they could take it all from.
That's part of the cycle, right? Like that, and that's what keeps you there, right? So I commit this infraction. Now my time is longer. Now they make more money because I'm staying. You know what I'm saying? It's all part of the same circle.
You know, and I'm one of these people where, you know, I hate conspiracy theory, because I'm just a person that I like to deal with facts, right?
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of this stuff is kind of, it's not a conspiracy, it's common sense.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like, okay, if I'm the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, right? Now, the easiest option is to outsource it to like India, which they do, but you still got to pay them something. Even if it's like $2 an hour, it's like, And it's like, you know, it's a language difference, even though they speak English, but it's, you know, whereas somebody from America that speaks English that you can pay 10 cents an hour.
Right.
Literally
nothing. 10 cents a day, right? You said?
Not an hour, right?
Ten cents an hour.
I mean, on the bottom, company's bottom line, why would it not? Why would I not do that? So being that that's a work population, it's really no incentive not to have people in jail. It's, if anything, there's an incentive to keep the jails full.
Right.
Because you have a free two million people that's locked up, that's working for free. And this is why it's not, makes common sense that we have 25% of the world's prison population, only 5% of the world's total population.
Yeah, it's a big business.
It's a business. When it all comes down to money at the end of the day.
All comes down to money. And unfortunately, we came here as labor. That's how black people brought to this country. So we've maintained that, you know? And until we understand that reality and we stop punishing each other and start figuring out how to build with each other, because everybody looks down on somebody else based on their circumstances. Oh, you don't got this, and you should have never did this, and not understanding people's circumstances. And so until we create a culture, because the problem with us as blacks in America, we don't have one culture. We're not a monolith. And people say that as if it's a positive thing. And I think it's to our detriment, because if you look at every other culture, when you look at the Asians, they have one culture. You know, they immediately when something happens, they move together because it represents their culture. When you look at the Jew, they have one culture. So when it happens, they all move together at one, and it gives them a sense of power. Even when you look at the Hispanic community, Dominicans and Puerto Ricans, they have a culture. They form together. We the only people that might hang with the Puerto Ricans. We might be over here. We might be everywhere else, but I don't got to do it just because you're black. We don't feel no obligation just because you're black to support you. It's just not how most people feel. They feel like, I did it myself. You need to figure out. If a Chinese person come to jail, every Chinese person, Asian person in there is figuring out, are you good? What you need? They speak their language. They're going to bring them. They're going to feed them. They're going to make sure he's good. Hispanic person come, all of the Hispanic people going to pull them. They're going to feed them. You good? Black person come, they're going to look at you like you got two heads.
Feed you to the wolves.
Unless they knew you from somewhere, but ain't no just black people going to say, oh, this is a black dude, I'm going to make sure he's good. It just don't work like that. So it shows the divide. We just don't move.
Being on the inside, did some of your comrades while you was locked up start to realize the financial play behind it? Like, were they starting to see, like, this, like, I'm out in the streets doing all of this, but this is actually a bigger play here, and now I'm working for free for... Yeah. Lord and Taylor, all of these companies, like, did they ever realize that inside? Did you ever have those kind of conversations with people inside?
It's the most brilliant people I ever met was in prison. I met geniuses, men, and they never come home. Men who got convicted for stealing a dollar out of a white woman's purse, supposedly an armed robbery, doing 30 or 40 years, you know, at 17, and been getting hit at the board 3 and 4 times. Like, This is the reality that we come from. You know, the crimes that people, that our brothers are spending. If you heard the reality of what these crimes, I went to jail. I did 7 to 14 years, no record. I was going to John Jay College, nothing, for supposedly robbing $10 from a cab driver with a gun that nobody ever found, nobody was ever hurt. And they sentenced me to 7 to 14 years in the prime of my life with record deal, all these things. People sending me letters like, oh, we'll do this for him, we'll make sure he's good. And they said, nah, we got to send him to jail for stuff to ruin your life. You understand? I said, this is the reality that our people come from. They don't have those realities in different communities. You know, I know the white dude was convicted of raping some girl behind, you know, and throwing her in a dumpster. And they said, we're not putting him in jail because it's going to mess up his college. He's going to college.
Yeah, out in Seattle.
You know what I'm saying? So this is what we dealing with. This is a reality that we dealing with. So of course, this dude, when you get in there and you start to really look and say, damn, it's only us coming in these doors, and it's only us staying. You know, they go to minimum facilities where they're doing 2 or 3 years, no matter what the crime. They're getting billions. They doing white collar crimes, getting $100 million, and they going home for 2 and 3 years. Jamila told you about her situation. She ended up doing 10 years,
yep.
Who put her on did 1 and 2 years. You know, the people who made way more money than her ended up doing 2 years in 1 year or getting probation. So, and the only difference was the skin color. You know what I'm saying? So this is the reality that we're dealing with. When we sit there, of course we realize. If you have any level of intellect, you realize as a play that this is a money thing. You know, they're getting about $50,000 a year for each inmate in there, and they don't provide nothing for you but a bed that just keeps going in and three pair of state greens. Everything else, and they give you a fucking a state meal every day. They're probably spending about $1,000 a week on to feed a whole prison, right?
Yeah.
And they make $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 on each individual in that prison.
And it also helps the economy of the local town, because these towns are like in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And the prisoners,
it's a whole industry.
Yeah, they count it as population. So like when they do the census,
yep.
They get, and so they're taken out of their community. So
knowing that they
people.
Can't vote.
It's more people in the other community. And then they have like a thing where it's like, because one of my cousins was incarcerated at a federal penitentiary in Connecticut. And I went to visit him, and I think I had jeans on. So I didn't know that you couldn't wear jeans. So you had to buy sweat. So I drove 2 hours to get there. I'm not going to not go. So they're like, don't worry about it. There's a Marshalls down the street. And they're like, that's convenient. They like, everybody, nobody really knows that, right? So it's like every day people's going to Marshall. The prison, one prison guard was cool. He's like, look, this is what you do. You buy it, keep the tag on, then return it. But they're like, it happens so much. It's not a coincidence that the Marshalls is right there.
Builds your business around it.
Exactly. It's crazy.
And most person ain't going to take it back because they're like, I ain't going back. Let me give me a pair of jeans real quick, yeah. Little sweats, and I'm good.
Yeah, it's going to be a 5-hour ride back home. No, I'm good.
And that's what we deal with, man. It's like the whole town, all them towns upstate, you know, a lot of these towns, I never been War Kill and all these, that's the whole industry is prison. There's nothing else. Orleans, it's nothing. I went to the jail in Orleans. And Bedford Hills is right across the street. And everybody, all of the COs was like cousins, family. He was either his family or he was married to his sister. It was one town where everybody in the town worked in the prison.
After you released, did you have to go through the probation process? Because I know that's something that Meek talked about a lot, and he's trying, you know, they're trying to do the reform project. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I didn't have to do probation. I had to do parole,
okay.
Which is pretty much... It's similar, but it's different. You know, as far as parole, when you're on parole, you have a certain amount of time on parole that you have to complete without being violated. So I came home. I did 7 years in prison. I had a 7 to 14 means I either do 7 or the maximum I could do is 14. So after I was released on my parole, that means I had 7 years left on parole.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is, you have to not get into any trouble for 7 years. And if you do, they can keep violating you based on the amount of time that you have. So if you on parole, right, and you get violated, you do a year, good, and now you get into trouble, they can give you 2 years in prison. The maximum they can give you is 2 years every time. And they can keep doing that until you get to your maximum date.
So that 7 years could be like 2, 2, 2, and then 1?
Yeah, or you could just be doing good, nothing, boom, and then, all right, we're going to violate you. 3 years. Or we're going to max you out on your, whatever they want to do. Probation is different. It's because they can keep starting your probation over.
Mm.
Probation period means that, all right, we're going to suspend your sentence for 5 years, but you can't get into any trouble within that 5 years. And if you do, we can start it all the way over again.
Mm. And trouble can be anything, any form. Of, that's why the Meek Mill thing was he's a celebrity. He's a, you know, one of the top rappers. So that really highlighted, but there's millions of stories like that for even worse. Even the Nipsey Hussle situation, rest in peace. But remember the guy that was just there and he got arrested.
Right.
They let him out because it was so ridiculous, but he literally got shot.
And he got arrested.
He got shot and got arrested because he was around felons.
He's in the presence of a felon, yep.
So it's like, you know what I'm saying? It's like he's going to get clothes that Nipsey was supposed to have given him because he just came home from doing 20 years in jail.
Right.
And he gets shot his first day home and he gets incarcerated the same night. Like, you know what I'm saying? It just speaks to the, like, as far as the criminal justice reform, Do you think that, that should, because I don't think that that's talked about enough as far as the financial. Do you think like that there should be pressure on companies? Like, I feel like no company should be able to benefit from a prisoner. Like, that should be in a bill. Like, you can't have prison labor. Like,
but to say that is to not understand that that's what this country is built on. We built on slavery. They just figured out a new way to call it. Like, we came here as slaves. We came here as slaves and we did all of the labor. You know, we were the commodity. So they figured out when they ended slavery, they just figured out how do we continue to justify it. I put it in my phone at the French one. They don't call you slaves no more. They call you criminals. You know what I'm saying? So now it's in the Constitution. Slavery is illegal unless when you get arrested.
13th Amendment.
So that means now they've legalized slavery. So in order for the country to continue to is built on capitalism. So capitalism has to flourish. The reason why capitalism flourishes is because there has to be a group of people that can just continue to feed the upper echelon. And jail is the way. The lower class are gonna do crimes, they're gonna die, they're gonna spend all their money, and that is how the other people stay rich. They figure out ways to continue to profit. They're not gonna spend their money, so they figure out ways to profit off of you. So for them to, for you to say they're gonna write in the Constitution that they can't make money the way that they make money, that don't make sense to them. That's why they try to get rid of Obama. That's why they immediately Obama was trying to end the prisons. He was trying to end private prisons. And when they immediately stopped that. You understand what I'm saying? He was trying to end private. He was like, nah, we stopping that. You know, that was his job. Like, we don't want no more private prisons.
Yeah.
Since Trump got voted in office, private prison stock went up because the goal was
to they know the business.
You know what I'm saying? So when they do this prison reform, it's a strategy. Prison reform, right? Okay, we're gonna let the nonviolent prisoners out. We're gonna let people who got drugs. We're going to let them out, boom. But we're going to make sure that everybody who commits something that we call violent just never comes home. And we're going to create situations to where violence is inevitable. You understand? So we're going to create, now we got a pandemic where we know the communities, in our communities is going to be broke. They're going to be hit the hardest. It's going to be a couple of dudes that got it and others who don't. So after this pandemic, it's going to be a hot summer. It's no activities. No clubs to go to, there's no parties, there's no sports. You just outside in the heat all day. Kids is gonna get, the crime rate is gonna skyrocket.
Yeah, in New York City, they're getting rid of Rikers Island, they're putting a prison on each borough, that's the proposal. It's crazy, because I never hear about new schools being built in these boroughs, but that is a headline, man. I know you do work in the schools, what's your thoughts?
They don't build schools. You know what I'm saying? Most of these schools is the school to prison pipeline is real. Most of these schools look like prisons. Hey. You know, I've been in prison. Most of these schools are pretty much models for preparing our kids for prison.
That's crazy. You said that. It's crazy. And he's going to remember the story. When I was in the Bronx, I was teaching. I had Shadi come speak for career day. And as soon he went through the metal detector and said, yo, what the hell is this? Like, literally, it looked like the 47th precinct. Like the blue paint, the bars, the metal detectors, security walking around everywhere. I was like, yo, damn, this is real. Like I don't think people really understand that school to prison pipeline, suspending kids, not providing them with adequate education, so they're more likely to not even go to school. So they back on the streets, and what's gonna happen? They're gonna feed the beast, man.
And that's the reality. That's what is important, that they see people like you and me in these schools. Because we are able to identify with that reality. We are able to identify with the fact that you're young, you're energetic, you don't really see the need in school, you fidgety, you want to see girls, you want money, and we able to redirect that. We able to make these classrooms comfortable and fun enough to where the average person don't want to come. Oh, I'm going to go there because, oh, he going to be there. That's my cool teacher. Let me go to make sure I go to this class. You understand what I'm saying? We start creating institutions that reflect what our culture is. We don't learn the same way everybody else. We don't want to sit at a desk and look at no chalkboard and write. Now we want to be moving around. We want to have activities. If we created institutions that taught us the way that we learn based on our that's one of the things that Kanye was saying when he did that meeting with Trump, and he was sitting there, he's like, yo, what if we had schools where they learned through basketball, where they taught you through this? Schools would be more fun. It would be appealing to us. That's how they created a whole structure that fits how Europeans learn, mm-hmm. and told us we have to acclimate to that. That's not who we are. If you create a school and you create a structure that's for us, by us, that we understand how to teach us, we understand, you know, the best to appeal to the attributes of each individual, you know what I'm saying? You will see higher levels of people going to school and enjoying school. Instead, they create some shit that they know that it's not for us.
It's tough, man, because like I said, man, education is important, but a lot of people, especially in our community, don't aspire to be in education. They don't aspire to be teachers. It's not enough money. You know what I'm saying? Like, we grow up, it's like, yeah, I want to be this. I want to be a rapper. Nobody aspires to be in education when everybody that you talk to has started there. You know what I mean? So it's important, like you said, for you to be in schools, myself, Shadi coming into schools, it's important because the representation, they may not see you again. They may not see, like, for one time only, they may see you and say, like, wait, I could be that. I mean, that is super important.
Yeah. You need to see it to be it.
So we talked about the economics of prison, but that's only half of the conversation, because even when you come out, there's a whole economic play behind that, right? It's like being in a halfway house, and they get paid per bed, and then it's like you got to give a portion of your paycheck back to the state. And I know you had a program with helping people out with their credit, because it's a whole thing. Like, when you come out of jail, you don't have a license.
Yeah.
You don't – passport, no credit. You don't have any credit history. You can't rent an apartment. So now it's like – you can't get a job a lot of times, especially if you have a felony. So the economic is not like, okay, you just did a few years in jail, now you're back to being normal.
Yeah.
Now it's a whole economic play off of that.
And
it's like, so can you talk about that, like getting out of jail? How's that process as far as, like I said, like building your credit and stuff like that?
That process is very, if you're not in the know, you don't have people around you that can educate you. You know, especially right now, we understand that if you don't have credit, you don't have nothing. You know, so a lot of these dudes coming home and they took my money and they got cash. Can't even get nothing with cash. You can't get an apartment. You can't do anything. You know, so that transition is different, especially depends on how long you've been in prison. There's dudes that's coming home now that have been in jail 20, 25 years. You know, so they trying to figure out, like, what do we do next? How do we do this? And that process is slow. It's different. You know, I was blessed enough to have people to put me to say, "Oh, we're gonna get you a cell phone. You gotta do this," you know. Because when I left, I barely had a cell phone. I had one of the first cell phones in the two way. You know so it was way different. So when I came home and was, you know, cell phone, and you had to get an Instagram, and I had to get what was it, MySpace? I came home with MySpace. You know what I'm saying? So many things. I was blessed enough to have people that put you in the thing. So it's a lot to readjust yourself to in prison. And a lot of times people don't, and they become institutionalized, because it's easier to live in prison because they can do things for you. You get three meals. All you got to do is wear state greens. You know, if you're a person who don't have no family, no nothing, you don't have no support system, then it's easier. Or even if it's not easier, you don't mind going to prison. You're like, fuck, I'm going to go home. I'm going to throw a brick. I'm robbing this. Either I'm going to get a million. If not, then I'm just going to come back here. I know I'm good here. I'm going to get three meals, and I'm just going to be chilling. And, you know, I know the CO's here. My name is heavy in the jail. Like, some people have, that's become their life. And they institutionalize. And they can't survive outside because it's moving too fast, or they don't know how to adjust. They don't have nobody to help them adjust, and they realize that. You know, so that's what they call people being institutionalized. You see a lot of dudes that come out, you probably know them, they'd be out for a week or two, and you're like, damn, this nigga going back to jail again?
Yep.
It's like, and you're like, what he did? Like, how he? And you don't get it, but he got in his mind that he can't survive out here. You know what I'm saying? Rather than say that, he just going to do something that's so outlandish, and then go to jail, you know, and that's what it creates.
So you know, wanted to have this conversation to raise awareness, but we never want to leave anything on a damper note. So what is the, because the whole point of what you're doing as far as an activist is to create change, right? So now it's like the first part, I think, for people to be inspired to make change is to actually be aware of what's going on. Because a lot of people just are ignorant to that fact. And not ignorant in a bad way. They just don't know, right? And it, and that's a really a good thing. It's like, you know, you shouldn't know what jail is. Like, hopefully you don't have, you never have to go to jail. But it's like now hopefully people are a little bit more educated on what's going on. So
and the role they play in it.
Yeah. So what are some, in your opinion, what are some solutions that we, of course, there's a political solution where, you know, there's different ideas in place to like take the felon thing off of a job application. And yeah, so how can the average person, or how can, as a community or as a country, as a world, make this thing better? Is it through political action? Is it through, like, what's some of the avenues?
So many different avenues. I want to shout out my brother, Jay Jordan. He lives in California, and he started a program called Time Done.
Oh, we know Jay Jordan. We spoke to him.
And Watts? From Watts?
Yeah. We spoke to him.
Oh, yeah.
Shout out to him.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Jay is, he's out there doing the Time Done. Like, the last time I was with Nipsey, we did a concert with Time Done that Jay had put together. You know, it was probably like 4 or 5 months before Nipsey passed away. And so anyway, he's doing the Time Done concert. I mean, Time Done initiative, where basically after you serve your time, after a certain amount of time home, you get to get your record
expunged.
You know, completely expunged. Because what happens, just the stigma of being a felon, it's over. It says over 3,000 things, jobs that you can't have.
It's like a scarlet letter. Yeah.
You know, the things, jobs, you can't be a barber. You can't be a dog walker. You can't be a babysitter. Like, certain things you just can't be at all if you have a felony. So he's working to get those. I think they're about to pass it in California. And like initiatives like that, we have to support those type of initiatives. We got to look at those, bring them over here. We also have to, as individuals, stop stigmatizing each other. You know what I'm saying? Because it's easy. You know, like, even when I'm watching this Ahmaud Arbery case, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's people that come from where we come from, it's like, that try to justify this man being killed. Like, I've heard people like, well, he should have did this. Or he walked into this abandoned house. So you telling me walking into a house where they do a construction justifies you killing me? Like, that makes sense to you? Oh, well, what was he doing? It don't matter. If you thought he was trespassing, give him a ticket for trespass.
Right.
But gives this man the right to approach him with a gun and shoot him? And they said he wouldn't comply. Well, who are you to
exactly? You're not a cop.
What a random person driving down the street with a shotgun you pointing at me.
And I'm supposed to comply to you. Like, this is the mindset. And us, and some of us, have adopted it. We dealing with Stockholm syndrome, in which we start to identify and love the people who oppress us.
Abuser.
We have to stop that. Like, we can't give voice or credence to shit that don't make sense. Like, you can't, when we saying, yo, it's a million people in prison, and prison is probably the biggest population that can be affected from the coronavirus, and they can die easier than anybody because shit's like a petri dish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, understand that. And people are like, I don't care, they did a crime. You don't know what nobody did that's in prison. Yeah. And if they're not sentenced to death, why would you be okay with just sacrificing those people's lives? They fathers, they husbands, they brothers to people. Like, we have to start humanizing people who get incarcerated, because some people get incarcerated, come home, and they do brilliant things. Some people don't even belong in prison. Every day we find out that somebody's conviction is overturned. So we have to take that stigma and that false narrative that everybody that's inside of prison is just trash.
And right. The reality is that the vast majority of people has done something that could have put them in jail.
Jeopardize their freedom.
At some point.
Yeah.
Whether it's big or small. You've done something in your life where if a cop was there and if right circumstances, you could have potentially been in jail.
Yeah, and I was going to say, this is a living testament. Like, we've had a number of guests on Earn Your Leisure that have been incarcerated and have come out to do amazing things. You know what I mean? So that's what the importance of this is like what we said earlier, is like, yo, we got to see it and we got to keep highlighting stories like that. So everybody that's been in that situation or has somebody that is near that situation is like, yo, nah, it's not over. There's plenty of opportunities out here for us.
Yeah, I taught a financial literacy class in jail. Shout out to Tony Earl, my guy. He, you know, yeah, Tony's a good dude. He had a jail program in Rockland County. And I taught, and that was my first time teaching financial literacy in jail. I teach it in school and stuff like that. And I was pleasantly surprised. It was one of the best experiences I had. Like, they was all asking me questions. Like, they was, like, really paying attention. Yep. They was real astute. A lot of them really knew a lot in regards to stocks and cryptocurrency. Like, they was on it. Like, you know what I'm saying? So I say that to say, it's like, don't look down on somebody just because they're incarcerated, because everybody has an opportunity to change their life. You don't know what they're incarcerated for. And regardless of anything, it's like, the whole point of being a human is to be a better person tomorrow than you were today.
Yeah.
So we can't judge people. And yeah, it's like, we can't give up on people, because you're giving up on millions of people that can be doctors, scientists, lawyers. Like, they can change the world. And
real estate moguls.
It's like you said, it's our best potential, because we see that on Earn Your Leisure. A lot of from Caesar, DJ Envy's partner.
Real estate mogul.
He's a real estate mogul and he was incarcerated. And it's like, you know, that's just one of many people that we've had on. Some of the most brilliant people that we've had on have criminal backgrounds. So, you know, it's important to highlight this and to really, you know, even if it doesn't affect you, it affects you one way or another. You have a family member, you have somebody in your community that you know personally.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody does. It's just, it's impossible not to. So, Mice, man, I appreciate you taking your time out to kick it with us. Like I said, you know, something that we wanted to do for a while. So I'm glad that
it's
we
like
had
a
making. Yeah, I'm glad we had an opportunity to talk about this.
I'm glad to have it, man. This is a dope conversation. Good energy, man. Hopefully somebody hear this and take heed to this, man. Understand that we all human, man. You know, we all go through ups and downs. You make mistakes. Sometimes you make the wrong turn. Some of us are blessed enough, you know, that our mistakes didn't turn out to be tragic. They didn't land us in prison, you know. So we should be blessed for that and try to pay it forward, you know. Because understanding that we could, at some point, we probably could have ended up on the opposite. So, you know, don't look down on your brothers, man. Give them a hand, lift them up.
Yeah, prayers up to everybody that's incarcerated, family, friends, brothers, and sisters that are fighting the coronavirus inside of prison. That's a real situation that I don't think people really understand, right? We're on the outside, like, complaining, like, oh, we can't go, and we can't leave our house. But we're talking about a place where it's overcrowded already. There's no way to social distance. It's a real situation. So prayers up to everybody that is fighting that and facing that right now. That's their circumstance.
I was watching CNBC yesterday, and they said, they were saying, like, some of the prisons, like, the population, how much people have.
It's crazy.
Marion, Indiana, that's like a real well-known prison. I think it's like underground.
Mm-hmm.
85% of the prison population has corona.
Yeah, they, in Texas, same thing. They tested 2,400 inmates. 75% tested positive. It's like
that's wow. That's crazy.
It's crazy.
Like, and obviously, there's underlying health issues with people that are incarcerated. And a lot of people probably going to die.
Underlying health issues the fact that there's not proper oxygen.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? If you look at the numbers from the coronavirus, and you look at where most of the people, the mortality rate is highest in places where people are inside. You look at old folks' homes and things like that, where people are trapped inside.
So,
okay, when you look at a prison, it's nothing else. You inhaling the same air somebody's breathing all day. It's not like no fresh air, it ain't no windows nowhere.
Same shower, same toilet, like
public space.
It's like 85% of the population in that prison has corona. Like, that really surprised. I'm like, wow,
How do you stop 100% from getting it? And it doesn't just stop with the prisoners, because you have COs that are in the prison that go home to their families that now bring it. You know what I'm saying? So it's like a real situation. I don't really think people are fully grasping the magnitude of that.
No, it's an issue. But anything you want to make the public aware of? any initiatives you got going on, any and music too. We didn't get a chance to talk about music, but I know you still you still spitting. Are a musician.
Still spitting.
So we didn't get a chance to talk about that. But any projects that you're working on, anything you want to make the public aware of?
My project been out for a couple months. I did Sold Out for Sale. Probably my favorite mixtape that I did in a long time. So I would advise y'all to go download that. I just wrote this new children's book. I know my rights is important, especially based on what we talking about now. It's Dope. Talking about the Bill of Rights. I broke down the first 10 amendments of the Bill of Rights. And, you know, for children from like age 8 until high school, it's really a family oriented book. A lot of adults read it and said, you know, that I broke down the amendments to them because they didn't even really understand them. So it's a book that, you know, shout out to McBride. Publishing for partnering with me with it. With the book is so dope.
Where can we purchase?
You can purchase it on Amazon. It has so many different, like, the animation on it is like fire. Like, the whole animation of it is just like I took pictures of like my kids. This is like one of my sons. They drew my sons like on the cover. This is my son, and this is my son. So, like, you know what I'm saying? I try to make it real dope for people. It talks about the right to vote, the right to religion.
Oh, wow.
You know what I'm saying? It has things. So,
yeah, I'm going to get that for my son, man.
Go on Amazon right now. Order it off Amazon.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm going to get that for my son. I was just thinking, summer reading, we got to have something for him to do.
Whew.
So I'm not going to be playing video games.
Yeah, it's going to be a long couple months.
Sheesh.
Yeah, this is different.
Troy, household items?
Yeah, shout out to everybody on patreon.com. We got a few new members. Shout out to Cheyenne. She's a tier 4 member. And Mark and Baked Beans and Rice. We are looking forward to having, those conversations. We appreciate your support. And everybody, if you're looking to join Patreon, it's patreon.com/earnyourleisure. We have, like we said, 5 different tiers. You can join anyone, and they all come with different incentives, tier 4 and 5. We'll get you access to our online school. UIL University is one of the fastest growing online universities in the world. So feel free to join that. And one of those other incentives is that you have access to our private real estate Facebook group, man. And that has just been killing it, man. A lot of learning is going on in there. We have a movie club, a book club. We have webinars. It's incredible, man. So everybody that's been joining that, we appreciate it. And everybody that's supporting the merch on earnyourleisure.com. We got the assets over liability. Shotty got he got the tracksuit on, man. The tracksuit was kind of crazy. I actually had to give my red one away. It was that hot. So shout out to everybody that's supporting the merch and continue to support it, man.
Yeah, for sure.
It's tough. I like that.
Yeah, appreciate it.
We're gonna send you some stuff.
Get you some merch. Yeah, for sure. Make sure you like and subscribe on YouTube. That's important. Comment all of that. And thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.